Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar, live. Yes, live. And live radio is something else, I tell you. We're dead nervous here today. Yesterday, Saturday's broadcast was great. Few glitches with it, but it went pretty well. Yesterday was a complete disaster. Many thanks to those of you who put up with yesterday's broadcast and persevered to the end, despite the fact that we had major problems with sound quality. It was fairly wild here in the studio. Pekka Cameron and John Pallister did a pretty amazing job chatting away. Whilst Dirk and me were diving under tables, pulling cables in, pulling things out, cursing. And by the end of the programme, we were reduced to just one iMac using the built-in microphone. And we were just going out through that. We'd cut the other machine off. Now, we think we've solved the problems. We think we had some pretty bad looping going on. We're not quite sure why, but we've got a few clues. Actually, I'll tell you. I think the problem may be that we had the headphone mics both turned on and we were picking up three microphone broadcasts. So that's pretty odd. Anyway, this is the third of this series of Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar. Our final one in this series will be on Thursday. I'll tell you details about that later. But for those of you who haven't listened to any of our other broadcasts, what's it all about? Well, we've been doing podcasts for about 2 years now and I've enjoyed doing them. Bit of a buzz at first, trying to make the software work. But somehow, it's lost the immediacy for me of live media. I love going out doing interviews on the road, but just sitting here recording Skype conversations and you knowing if something goes wrong, you can always cut it, doesn't have the same buzz as doing this. Mine dirts and my nerves are pretty shredded. So anyway, we thought, let's try radio. I've always liked radio. I'm a radio addict. I'll let you into a secret. I listen to the Archers avidly, and half the time I'm listening to the storyline, and half the time I'm trying to work out how they're making it. Now, I think that radio's got a great future. It's cheap, potentially, because it's still expensive buying bandwidth. It's very accessible. Okay, the software is a bit of a kit to put together again, but then it was in the early days of podcasting, and I've got a feeling there'll be some easy-to-use applications coming out pretty soon. And it offers quite a lot of opportunities for interactivity, and I suppose it's a lot of fun. Well, anyway, this series of three programmes are sponsored by the JISC Emerge programme. He said, shuffling around in his notes to try and find his thing which says what Emerge is all about, failing miserably. Anyway, yeah, here it is. Emerge is an innovative 28-month consortium project. This is your word from your sponsors. Its primary aim is to support the creation of a sustainable community of practice that would develop and exploit new emergent technologies. Social software, pervasive computing, for use in educational settings. And thanks to George, who yesterday, just before the programme, sent us a message saying, break a leg. And of course, it all went disastrously wrong. And 2 minutes before we started today, there was a bleeping coming in on my mobile, and I said, if that's George, I'll kill him. So George has sent us a gori. I've no idea what a gori means. I suppose it's Italian for break a leg or something like that. But anyway, thanks to George, thanks for the message, and it does seem to be running today. On Thursday's programme, we'll be launching the Emerge Bazaar project. And Emerge Bazaar is very much about linking the many great Emerge projects to practice, to helping the projects, the development projects in social software, making their work accessible and visible, sharing together and linking up to practitioners. And that's really one of the themes of these programmes. Now, who have we got on the programme tonight? Well, first of all, I'll be talking to Matt Montaigne. And I guess that's our second contribution to our second theme for this series of programmes. Because today is Earth Day, and we at Pontedusky want to support Earth Day. What's Earth Day about? Well, it's a 26-hour, I don't know how you're doing it, Matt. It's a 26-hour webcast where educators from all over the world are working on student projects and they're broadcasting to contribute to raising awareness about environmental issues. And Matt will be telling you how you can get in touch and how you can listen to the Earthcast programme. And then we'll be talking to Andreas Outwater from the University of Koblenz in Germany. Andreas is doing brilliant stuff with podcasting, live radio, etc. with his students. And Andreas is also contributing to the Earth Day and to the 26-hour webcast. And my third guest is going to be a great pleasure for me to introduce Ray Elfring. There's a bit of a story to that. Ray and me have to meet together, of course, quite often because we work in close partnership between his company, Raycom, and Pontedusky. And of course, after a hard day's work, we're inclined to get a little thirsty and we need to get a few beverages down us to deal with that thirst and the dust of a hard day's work in front of a computer. And there's a pub near here that I like a lot, which is a pretty idiosyncratic place. And it's got a couple of old aircraft seats raised on a platform about a metre above the ground. And Ray and me sit there surveying the crowd in front of us. And we've got into this idea that we were broadcasting live the Ray and Gray Show. Hi, I'm Gray. And he's Ray. It's the Ray and Gray Show. So today the Ray and Gray Show really will go live. Okay, this is Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar. We're going to go into a short break now, a short musical break. And when we come back, I'll be Skyping through to Matt Montaigne. Called Grace, or have I got it the other way around? No, I think that was a song called Mayor by a band called Grace. It's from an album called Outside the City, which I'm really proud to say was produced and made in Pontypridd. And I'm going to be telling you a bit more about the making of that in a moment. Okay, now I'm going to be going through to Matt Montaigne to talk to him about Earth Day. And we're ringing Matt now. Hi, Matt.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Matt. You're a bit low on your volume. Can you see if you can get a bit of volume up there?
Oh, I'm sorry. How is that? Is that okay?
That's much better. That's much better, Matt. Where are you, Matt?
I am in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in the USA.
Well, that's the first person from the USA we've had on Sounds of the Bazaar Live. It's great to talk to you.
It's great to be here, Grant. Thanks for having me on. And just as a side note, I really, really enjoy your program. Extremely well done. So just wanted to pass that along to you.
Thank you very much. We're still practicing. It's a bit hairy, this live stuff. Can you tell me something about the whole Earth Day idea? I've heard from Christina something about it, but I'm afraid I haven't had enough time to really look at it in depth.
Oh, that's all right. Well, again, thank you for having me on for a quick chat here. It's getting down to the 11th hour, and we're about ready to go here. In about, I think, 9 hours is when we officially go on the air. First of all, we're going to follow the day as it proceeds through UTC time or GMT time, if you will. And it's going to be a 24-hour. The original goal was to try to cover all 24 hours, and we kind of went into the project we started out with two or three people on the first conference planning call via Skype. And we were thinking, oh boy, we're never going to cover the 24 hours. We'll be lucky to get 4 or 5 hours. Well, 6, 7 weeks later here, Graham, we have webcasters from all around the world who've joined in partnership to really bring together what we think is going to be a pretty exciting conversation. And you're right, topics range from basic ecology and conservation to themes of Earth Day and what we can do around the world to really kind of work together on issues of the environment.
And what do you hope will come out of the whole Earth Day project, Matt?
Well, that's a great point, Graham. We hope, like any other event that takes place in a single day like this, no matter what it is, we hope that people take some form of action. I think the whole EarthCast crew, I think, hopes that people do something, anything. And again, we're not saying you've got to run out and buy an electric car or install solar panels on your roof or do something real kind of expensive. We're just trying to encourage people to do the simple little things, pick the low-hanging fruit and try to do their part. So perhaps somebody's motivated to change, to make a lifestyle change. Hey, that's great. But we're also going to try to drive people to joining some social networking groups. Facebook has many, many social networking groups dealing with the environment. There are some Ning communities out there. I'm sure in Bebo there are communities as well. So join an online community. Get involved. Start networking with people. Let's work together and kind of extend what we're doing here for a 24-hour EarthCast and try to unite and do some things together and make some progress.
No, that sounds brilliant. And what do you see the role of education? I'm interested that it's educators, Christina told me, that it's based in education, this particular event.
Yeah, that's a good point, Graham. We are working with, I'm a teacher myself. I'm a middle school teacher, so I work with here in the U.S., I work with students who are 10-year-old to 14-year-olds. And we're really trying to get student voices involved in this project. And and that's key and that's critical. I think sometimes younger people are a little bit apathetic when it comes to these kinds of things. That's why this past summer when Al Gore and his group did the Live Earth concerts for the Earth. Those were so inspiring because I think that's a great way to connect with young people through music. But we are bringing in youth voices from all over the world into this project. Definitely what's happened here is that the educators and the teachers, we've done a lot of the behind-the-scenes work. I can't say this has been a very student-centered project, but that's okay. Hopefully we started the spark, we've ignited something, and then we'll hopefully engage students throughout the 24-hour EarthCast itself. We will have students contributing both live and we'll have pre-recorded student projects submitted by people all across the globe. Students are a big part of it, Graham, and teachers, students and teachers. And it's kind of at... I don't know how you say it in Europe, but kind of like the not only just primary school, but also Christina's doing some things with the university students, and of course Andreas. We're very fortunate to have Andreas, who's bringing in some university level students to participate as well.
And what I should have said at the beginning of the program, Matt, is that we've got a chat room open on the following URL, tinyurl, that's tinyurl.com/5q3k73. I'll just say that once more, tinyurl.com/5q3k73. And while Matt's been talking, there's been some great examples of some of the work being done around Earth Day and some great links going in there, Matt. So it's a bit of a resource being created at the same time.
I know. I'm always amazed at the back channel conversation and the group coming together to build a resource, like you said, just as we're speaking here. And I must say, Graham, that sometimes I try when I'm interviewed in this format, I try not to peek at the chat room too much because I can get distracted so easily. And I'm sorry.
Tell me about it. It's difficult.
I apologize to the people in the chat room. I wish I could take a peek at that a little bit more. I hope some good resources are being passed around. And I know there's so many good things going on all over the world, which is so inspiring in terms of sustainability and conservation. And again, with the Earthcast, we hope to highlight just a small percentage of some of those wonderful things going on.
Well, I suppose the last question then, Matt, for those who aren't in the chat room, how can they access the Earth Day cast?
Yeah, well, first of all, Graham, we hope our Earthcast goes as well as your webcast is going today. So that's first off, I want to say that. Even if it doesn't, it's been a real positive experience for all of the teachers and students working up to this point over the past 6 or 7 weeks. But on the day, actually starting at midnight UTC or GMT or however you say it, what is that, 9 hours from now, Graham? Or no,
yes,
7 hours.
7 hours now, yes.
Yeah, 7 hours from now. You can access the program live by visiting http://www.edtechtalk.com/earthcast08. That's edtechtalk.com/earthcast08. We'll have a chat room there to participate in, just like people are doing now. We'll perhaps even bring some. We have some unconference things going on in the early morning UTC hours. So there's opportunity for people to actually get involved in the webcast right now. But if that can't happen, you can listen in and participate in the chat. And hopefully some teachers and students will listen to us around. I see Zhao. I'm sorry I did not say his name right. Joao is in the chat, and I know he's from Portugal, and he's been participating with us a little bit. So we're just thrilled to be 7 hours away, Graham, and thrilled that you brought me on here to talk about Earthcast 08.
No, I'm absolutely thrilled you are here, and this really does have a feel of live radio to it. We're talking about live things going on today. And something to look forward to. Well, I'll try and go. I hope I'll be catching up with you sometime in the next 24 hours, Matt, somewhere.
That'd be wonderful, Graham. We hope to see you in the chat room and maybe even bring you into the conversation during Earthcast 08. Thanks for all your good work.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Matt. Okay, this is Live Radio, Sounds of the Bazaar. And that was Matt Muntine talking to us about Earthcast. Now, I'm just going to repeat once more that chat room URL for you if you didn't get it the first time. Get your pens out now. It's http://tinyurl, that's tinyurl.com/5q3k73. Or, of course, there's other ways of getting in touch with us. You can always Skype me. That's Graham. My Skype name is GrahamAtwell, or one word. Or you can email me, Graham10, that's Graham10 on Graham10, that's Graham10 .mac.com. Okay, I'm getting myself all tangled up here. Now, we're going to go into another short musical break so I can untangle myself, and then we'll be coming back and talking to Andreas Outwater. Thank you. Bits of the technology we haven't quite got sussed. Dirk sits across the room from me at another desk. I suppose he's 3 meters away. And one thing, I can't hear the system's feed or the music. So when we go into musical breaks or come out of musical breaks, we've worked out an advanced piece of technology. We wave to each other and his arm slowly goes down, and that's when I'm supposed to start talking. Anyway, I'm going to talk to Andreas Eichwalter in a moment, but I'll first tell you how I met him. Last year, I went to a conference on social software in Salzburg, organised by Salzburg Research. And I was travelling around with my podcasting gear, with my iPod, trying to find people to interview. And suddenly I found three students with T-shirts saying podcasters wandering around also with their microphones competing with me on who was going to get the interviews. So I sort of find out where they're from, and I find it's Andreas running this operation, and he's brought the students down from his university. So we sort of teamed up because we thought it was a bit crazy us fighting, and started swapping over and started the old podcasting chat about which is the best microphone and the sort of sad things that podcasting talked about. And Andreas has become a great friend of mine. So I'm going to ring him up and have a chat about what he's up to now. Okay, Andreas, we're Skyping you in now. It says it's ringing. Andreas, are you there?
Hi, Graham.
Hi, Andreas. I'm very relieved that you came in, and you're coming through loud and clear at this end. Andreas, tell me something about what you've been doing with the podcasting. I know you've told me before, but tell our listeners what you've been doing.
Well, first of all, hello to the audience. And just a word about what we are doing on podcasting. I tell myself as a coordinator of the AG podcast, so it's a working group here in university, and so our podcast itself, it's a learning process of the students. It started in 2005, and it's called Bildung im Dialog. So the question is, who are the members of the podcasting AG? Students of pedagogics, mainly in adult education, but we are also open to all other interested student groups.
So how many students do you get participating in this, Andreas?
Okay, the active students, in the first moment, we have started with 4 students, but now the semester just started and we are still 14 people.
14.
14.
14.
14.
14. Four. That's enough. And what's the kind of activities you do with the students?
Okay, I mean, what kind?
Obviously, you're making podcasts, but what's the sort of curricula? How do you talk them through it?
Okay. I think we started a very tricky process. We didn't just podcast one seminar or one course. We started to settle it down to one theme so we can survive for more than one semester or so for more than 2 years. The second is we have our own topics, our own interests, bringing inside this podcast episodes, but also we have some topics and themes which are coming out of seminars or courses as result, or coming out as topics of some lecturers here who want to have it creatively worked
so
on.
So you're sort of making learning resources in the course of doing the podcasting then?
Sure, we will do it, and we have done it.
But what about the process of, I mean, I find with the podcasting, Andreas, as you must, technically there's a small hurdle to overcome at the beginning, but it's not technically that difficult. The real issue is the storyboarding and the structuring, How do you get them to storyboard and structure their podcasts?
Oh, that's indeed, that's in my point of view, that's the most valuable learning process, getting the having a topic and getting it verbalized somehow. So sometimes we start with an empty leaf, just brainstorming enough how to get it into words. Sometimes we got an idea how we can get it. And sometimes we have to go into deep and do a lot of research for bringing all the topics on it. So that's a question you.
What do you see as this sort of educational value? What are they learning?
Well, they are learning a lot. What they are learning is in my point of view, in my special point of view, learning is a process. For me, where I can be creatively embedded. And making something which is text-based interesting for an audience is a little bit more than just reading a book. You have to understand it, you have to structure it, you have to explain it, you have to teach it, and then you can make a podcast. So you're going a lot of, without thinking about it, you have to do to go a lot of steps through till you're enabled to use the microphone. So it's a bit of
Yeah.
teaching, but learning by teaching.
I'm quite interested. I see on the chat that Matt Montaigne is saying he has a hard time getting his students to do pre-production work. They just want to get started. And he says, I tell them garbage in, garbage out. Do you find it hard getting them doing the pre-production work?
Sometimes it's hard, sometimes not.
I mean, I know it varies here. I mean, I'll do some pre-production work, but to be honest, I get bored with it. And Dirk, who does most of the production work now for Pontedusky, he'll spend 10 times as much time and effort on it as I will. I don't know how you really decide what quality you're aiming at.
Okay. To get this point very out, the pre-production work is necessary. Everybody who's starting here in the small group, he knows if he has a microphone in hand and he isn't prepared, he will get the problem that he doesn't get a word out. So we will throw them we throw them all into the cold water and let them swim. And after a couple of tries, they got it right and got the right mood on how to podcast it.
Okay, cool. And I suppose the last thing then, because I suppose we've got to move on. I sit here and chat all day now. We've got the technical stuff working, but we do have some sort of time limits here. Earth Day again. You're well involved in Earth Day, I think, aren't you? What are you
Yes.
doing for Earth Day?
What we have done now, what we are doing, a lot of things we will do. We will live moderate tomorrow between 12 and 13 o'clock in
That's Central European time.
Central European summertime.
Yeah.
And what is in the pipe? We have a lot of vox pops. You know, vox pops is a specialty of us. We have
Yes, I know.
One colleague, Anke Pfeiffer, who's a really smart colleague. She said, "Okay, I have a seminar tended to the theme of new media, and I will give two groups a freedom to create a podcast episode part for the Earth Day tomorrow." And I've just listened to the results. They're great. They have not much time. They had 1 week to do it and 1 day to record it. And one group got out 10 minutes, and one group is going out 5 minutes of material. And what I'm going to do now is getting an interview of a neighbor of mine who is involved in in creating houses on the ecological and sustainable way.
Brilliant. So you can be heard Central European time tomorrow on the Earthcast. So make sure you've got those notes. Andreas, it's been great fun as always talking to you. No doubt we'll talk again soon. Don't hope you're on live radio, or I think you're in Salzburg, aren't you? We'll catch up and do some more podcasting together at the end of the month.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, bye, Andreas. Okay, this is Live Sounds of the Bazaar, and it seems we actually are going out live with some decent sound today. George, I wonder if you're around. If George Roberts is there, and I thought I saw him in the chat room earlier, I'd love to bring you in, George, to read us a poem to bring this show out. So if you've got a poem there, just tell me in the chat room and I'll call you in towards the end of the show. Anyway, we're going into another musical break now, and then I'll be talking to Ray Elfrink. It really is going to be the Ray and Gray Show live. Raymond Elfrink. A bit of a story about this. We were very nervous about this broadcast today because we had so many problems yesterday. And about 10 minutes before we went out, we were broadcasting a loop, but we thought we'd need to do a quick test to see if it was working. So I went to my Skype, and Raymond's name is Raymond, obviously, but I usually call him Ray. And I clicked on Ray Elfrink on my Skype list. And Ray Elfrink was some very surprised woman somewhere in South America, I think. Quite why she's appeared in my Skype list, I have no idea whatsoever, from the Equipos de Comunicaciones Motorola icon somewhere or other. So that was fairly wild. And what anyone listening thought was going on, I don't know. But this is the real Raymond Elfrink that I'm going to try and ring now.
Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray. This is
Hello,
the real Raymond Elfrink now. I don't know who this person with a Ray Elfrink name is. I have to send her to you. It was crazy. Anyway, Ray, I can remember many years ago when we first met in Bangor. We were
Wasn't
wandering
it
at
1596?
it was something like that. And we were wandering under a bridge, I think, and we had a long conversation about the difficulties of communication between software developers and practitioners. And I thought I'd have a quick chat to you because I think that divide's gone away. What's your feeling?
What do you mean that the difficulty in communication has gone away?
Yes. Do you think it's easier now to communicate?
Well, actually, I think nothing much has changed. If you remember that conversation you had under the bridge in Wales, you said that you have been reading some book, which you always all our for the listeners, all our conversations always start off by Graham saying, "Oh, look, I was listening to this, I was reading this thing yesterday, and and then he sort of goes off into nothingness with all his stories. Graham, so you told me that you wanted to invent a new language for techie people and normal people to talk to each other because it was so difficult to get conversation going. And then I said, but we already have this new language. And then you said, oh, sure, do we have that? Tell me about it. And I said, yes, it's called English, and we can all speak it already. Look, we're doing it now. And that's when we started to realize that the conversation wasn't about language, but about the will to communicate.
Yeah.
So, and I think that with that respect, nothing much has changed.
So, I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go on.
Go on. Yeah. I mean, there is a problem still, isn't there? The problem is that, yes, we all speak English, but the kind of technical English that software developers speak is a very particular, shall we say, corporate language of their own. And equally, educators don't talk perhaps the same way as technical developers do. How can we get that communication going between them?
Yeah, well, I always thought that what we need is, apart from conversation about the stuff we do, because then we always tend to talk in jargon, you know, using our three-letter abbreviations for everything. Maybe what's needed is for people to just talk as they would do to their mother. You know, if I explain to my mother, if my mother asks me, so Ray, what are you doing all day? Then I try to explain things to her in ways that she understands. And one of the reasons that I know how to do that is because I have also talked to her about other stuff than just my work. So sometimes I think it just helps if people, you know, communicate.
So what's the barriers? Does that have implications for the way we design software, the way we develop it?
Well, yes, it does. Because if we look at software today, then it's mostly built from a need and not so much, and that need is changing all the time. So also the software is in like a perpetual pilot state where it's not really finished all the time. And that means that the actual end users should be much more part of the development process. Actually, they should be the designers of the software, and the software developers should much more be the people. I'm reading sort of some of the chat now. Christina, thank you. and I totally lost my track here.
It's impossible so the software developers should talk.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The software developers should much more be the conveners. So, it's like you.
So you're saying the software developers as conveners of a co-development process. I mean, years ago, I worked for the Institute of Technical Building in Bremen University, and they had a whole idea of co-development, where users of any technology were involved in the development processes right from the start. And they called it co-shaping. And I guess I've always kept that idea that the technology is socially shaped, however you look at it. But to really get benefits for end users, you need end users presumably then involved in the development process from the start.
Yes.
How can you do that?
Well, look, in the end, somebody has to write the code, right? And you need a certain amount of knowledge to write code, so not everybody can do that. But that's the same with people who build a house. But if somebody needs, if somebody needs a tool to do their job, somebody works on a desk all day and has to move the paper from one end to the other and has to do something in between, right? And if they see a need with which they can make the life easier, they are the ones that understand their job the best. Now, if some programmer walks in, he not only doesn't know how this person does their job, but also he would do it completely different. So the logic that software developers have about stuff is is maybe for them very logical, but for normal people or other people...
You said it, you're a software developer.
I'm slagging up myself here. No, but for other people, it isn't logical at all. So, and I really like this. Every time we work with people, and the more computer illiterate they are, the more I like it, because they can really explain what they're doing. It might take some time for me to understand what they mean, but the software is much better in the end, and they feel a huge ownership over it, and I think that's very important.
Yes, I think that's right, because one thing I've sort of noticed is, yes, of course, usability is important, but I've seen people struggle hard and use the most goddamn awful software, and other times users rejecting stuff which seems to me to be quite easy to use and quite well designed. So it's not just a question of design, it is that question of ownership and whether it fits what they want to do, I suppose.
Exactly, and you know, people, even people who don't understand computers that much, they can work around bugs in software. They don't mind. My mother uses, you know, the few things she does, she just learns how to work around the bugs. So they are not the real problem. The problem is if it becomes illogical for them. And then there's no way. My mother doesn't pick up anything that's not logical to her. So
and people's logic in their working life depends on the logic of that working life, not on the logic of a machine at the end of the day.
Exactly. So why do we have to save our documents? That's only because computers work that way. In computers, you have stuff that's in the memory, and then at some point you have to commit it to disk. But I don't want to know that if I'm typing something. So if I type my text on the keyboard and it shows up on the screen, it's in the computer, right? So why do I have to save it?
That seems logical to me.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff with software, wrong with software, that has been wrong for years and years and years. And, you know, the software developers are not going to fix that.
So it's down
to the
users.
Of course, in the end, they have to fix it, but they're not the people who will initiate that.
Okay, Ray, I think that we're running out of time here. Thanks for coming on the show. It's great to talk to you as always. We always said we'd do the Ray and Gray show one day, and today we have.
Well, next time we'll have to do a real Ray and Gray show with video and everything, but I'll talk to you about that later.
Oh, don't talk to me about the technology of video. I'm just getting my head around radio. Okay, thanks, Ray. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, that was Ray Elfrink from Raycom in the Netherlands talking to us about software. We're going into one more musical break, and then I'm going to try and get George to read a poem, but I'm not sure. And yes, Paul Bailey says next time we do it from a pub. That's a great idea, Paul. And I'm sure the Emerge programme will sponsor the pub for us. Okay, into the musical break. our break here, and I'm delighted to see that all your social pressure worked. I've got George Roberts live online here. Hello, George.
Hello, Graham.
And George, this is the Culture Spot, the high point of these three programmes. We've invited you on, the Oxford Poet, I think is your Skype name. We've invited you on to read us a poem. So what's the poem going to be about, George?
Well, what would you like? I could do one on fathers, or I could do one on ancient saints.
Ancient saints?
Yeah, brought up to date.
Well, that sounds really cool, George. Let's hear your poem.
Okay, I'll do one. It's about St. Jerome. You might have heard of St. Jerome. He's known for translating the Bible into the common language of the time out of the originals, what it was written in. That was known as the Vulgar Latin. You might imagine this was quite a political act, but we won't go down that road too far. So this is as well as being a hermit and all that, St. Jerome was also a bit of a traveler in his day. And he was said to have enjoyed the company of cultured women. So I think I like my sense. I like my sense a bit real. This is St. Jerome brought up to date. The desert father dreams of throbbing chrome on Vegas Strip, motorcycle vista domes of rhythm, where bass guitars beat air to froth, and great hydraulic rams heave a wall of death to the lasered sky. What passes for simplicity these days? Sister virtues, out to carouse, obedience, poverty, chastity. By the way they look at him, you wouldn't know, all buffied up to play and hoping for a lift. If they speak the target, what's the source to flip? One truth to another, man to man like. Accents slide to dialects, dialects to tongues, entendres, double, valency, all around religion hums. The desert father parks his truck, the girls hop off the back, shake their hair out, settle jackets, shrug. Thanks, Jerry, for the lift. We'll see you later at the corner, like tonight. Sarai, he says behind his hat. The virtues walk into the dark. Jerome picks up his sack and heads to Walmart for paper and an inkjet refill kit. His translation work isn't going well. Aramaic is a bugger, fair enough, but that's not even half of it. You see, he's old, and what they speak ain't vulgar, but plain rude and unreceptive. You can put it down to many things, he thinks, and takes his burden to the cave. Obedience shoots pool to win. Poverty, cadges drinks. Who knows what that other girl is up to? As he settles to his place in the corner where the waitresses smoke and the phone never rings. And that's it.
Well, if I had some canned applause here, George, we'll have to get it for a future programme. I'd be playing you an outrageous roar of applause for that one. Absolutely
Cheers.
Brilliant. You've got a slot forever, George, on Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar. Cheers, thanks. That was George Roberts live on Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar. That was an amazing slot. And believe me, we sort of joked about George, I think on Saturday about it, but we didn't know. We only set this up really during the programme. That was absolutely wonderful. And you've got Christina going clap, clap, clap and on the chat room. Well, OK, this is the end of this three series, but we've got one more programme coming to you, a very special programme, because this will be part of the Emerge three-day online event. The event runs on from Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, and on Thursday at 1600 UK time, 1700 Central European Summer Time, we'll be launching the Emerge Bazaar online, and you're invited to come along to that launch. We're running a whole hour programme. Will I survive it? I don't know. It's been great fun. Yesterday was a disaster. Saturday was pretty good, and today I've just loved the program. I've enjoyed so much. The only thing is, I'm sort of supposed to be watching the time and moving this along, and I just start chatting to people and enjoying it and forgetting what I'm doing. It's just like you're talking normally, as I suppose I am. Anyway, this is Graham Atwell, Sounds of the Bazaar, but we've got some great music to play us out tonight. Now, I said I'd tell you something about this music. It's from an album called Outside the City. And this was produced by a community effort of students and people working in Pontypridd. It was a community effort that came together to make a CD of local bands from the South Wales Valleys. And they produced the video for the band, etc. Two of the students used producing this music and producing the music, the video which went with it, as a project, as part of their degree project. I work on a project called B-Learning, standing for Blended Learning. It's a European project. And I wanted to look at blended learning, not so much in the formal design context, but how we could use blended learning for informal learning. So I got together with these students and we managed to get a small contract for them to produce another DVD about the making of Outside the City and about the making of the video and about the learning that came from it. And that DVD will be coming out next month. Clips of it available on my website, www.pontydusky.org. If you'd like a copy of the DVD when it comes out, I'll announce the blog and we'll send it out to you. But I just think it's a great, working together with students is so good, and it's such cool music they produce. Outside the City, it's called. You can find out more about it on Roosterfish, www.roosterfish.com, I think it is. And if you search for Outside the City or on YouTube or etc., you'll find it. The track we've got to play you out on is track number five fingers. It's track number five. It's called Jam with Rabina by The Visions. This is Graham Atwell saying, have a great evening. Summer's coming. Been great to have you all. Thanks for listening. See you soon or hear you soon on Emerging Sounds of the Bazaar.
Legends of Runic. I don't care at all. Tumble to